Hi, this is CJ Wilson for the Green Bay Packers, and you listen to Railbird Central.
Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking NFL draft prospects today because this is the week of the Senior Bowl. That's where general manager Ted Thompson, the Packers scouting staff, many of the Packers personnel department are this week trying to find the newest prospects for the NFL draft. We have our own Pro Football Draft preview analyst, Pigskin Paul Guillemette of PigskinPaul.com, joining us on the phone from Mobile, Alabama. Paul, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, Brian.
Very good. I'm excited to talk about some NFL draft prospects with you today because there was a whole lot going on in Mobile this past week. So, tell me right off the bat here, Paul, a guy named Dee Ford, one of these outside linebacker defensive end hybrids from Auburn. I got a feeling that if he happens to be on the board at number 21, he just might be the type of talent that might be too good to pass up, no matter what's going on at that position in Green Bay. Give me your thoughts.
I think that is a possibility, Brian. He really looked fast down here, looked as if he had strong hands. He's got arms that are 32 and three quarters, which for a guy 6'2" is more than respectable. Down here at the weigh in, he weighed 243. And I think it's purely a question. The only thing that I would question about him as a fit in Green Bay, given his size and his skill set, and he is a pass rusher, is that you would be undertaking, once again, the task of converting a college, primarily a college defensive end with his hand on the ground 75% of the time or more, into realistically a stand-up outside linebacker, especially given the Packers' defensive schemes. I think he might be less of a challenge for a 4-3 scheme team where they could slowly transition him to the linebacker position, but in at least in long passing down yardage, as long as they've got a stout defensive line overall, you could still have him with his hand on the ground.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, Packers already have Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, and I understand that they have some injury issues these past few seasons. But if healthy, those guys are pretty good. Now, yes. If Dee Ford's on the board, and he's a talent you can't pass up, can a guy like that possibly even transition to inside linebacker?
Anything is possible, but I don't think that would play very well to his skill set at this stage of the game.
I got you.
Doesn't mean that he couldn't adapt, but I would say to you, anybody will adapt if it's, you know, the working situation and you're making the money. But let's face it, these athletes, because of the nature of their business, they have egos larger than most of the rest of us have, and anybody like Dee Ford eventually, I would think, given that he is so quick and so good as a pass rusher, is going to feel a little bit bad about being stuck in the middle of a defense where even the blitz possibilities are limited for most inside linebackers. So it could happen. I would just project, Brian, to be honest with you, I think you're right on with the talent aspect of it, but I would think at 21, given the influx of the underclassmen, there will be some other equally talented people at other positions where the Packers might have greater needs. And at this stage of the game, I certainly hope that Ted Thompson is looking at this draft with the expanded version of his mentor Ron Wolf's original statement of best athlete available. Ron Wolf always had a second aspect to that statement. And the second aspect in most cases was best athlete available at a position of need, if possible.
Yeah, I'm certainly kind of a proponent of that as well. Speaking of, you know, these defensive end, outside linebacker hybrids, there's a lot of guys at the Senior Bowl this week that I like that maybe aren't your guaranteed first rounders, but guys who could go on day two, maybe round three. I'm talking about like guys like Trent Murphy, Kareem Martin, Marcus Smith, Kyle Van Noy, Jeremiah Atauchu, Michael Sam, Adrian Hubbard. There's a bunch of guys that kind of fit this mold. But Paul, you don't have to talk about all of them, but maybe, you know, who are some of these guys that maybe stood out to you this week?
I will. Absolutely. And there's one name that you gave that I felt coming in when I was looking at the rosters and coming over here from the Shrine Game. There are always, at any of these games, but even at the Senior Bowl, because of the underclassmen glut, and because you get, this year there were 10 guys that were eligible for the draft, considered premium players, who, after hiring agents and talking with them, decided not to come to this game. And I put that list on my website and on the Great Blue North website early in the week. One of the guys that I felt was a filler, and he has totally converted me, that I would now say to you, he's such an athlete and such a productive player and such a fascinating player that I have to believe that this guy that I thought was an afterthought is a solid second-round pick of that group that you just mentioned, and that would be Chris Smith, the defensive end from Arkansas. He's a hard guy to plug, at least if you're looking at the size chart, because he only stands 6'1" and 1/8 inch tall, and he weighs 266 pounds. So I immediately look at Smith, who played defensive end for the Razorbacks, and I say, oh man, 6'1" and a fraction and 266. Other than bringing him in on third and long, I don't see how he has any chance at defensive end. And I, watching a few Arkansas games, sure didn't think that this guy was a super athlete. Mark me down as being converted down here. I didn't see, including D. Ford, I did not see anybody on the defensive line or the linebacker group that was as explosive and as polished and as, you know, just totally created havoc and was unblockable in every drill than Smith. I am sold. I don't know how you fit him in. I would say he's even a little bit shorter than, but he's heavier than. I would say, at least stylistically, I look at Chris Smith from Arkansas, and I think of Robert Mathis of the Colts.
Very interesting. That's definitely a good comparison there, or at least if he could live up to that kind of comparison. But yeah, I do think the outside linebacker talent there is pretty good in that day two range, and the Packers could get a good one if they, you know, decide to go to another position in round one and grab a better athlete. Kind of all the rage here, you know, lately with the Seahawks making the Super Bowl, Paul, is the tall cornerback, the guys who are 6'2", 6'3", it's the en vogue thing now. And I even heard Phil Savage, the director there at the Senior Bowl, kind of say that was a definite thing they took into consideration when asking some of these corners to come play in the Senior Bowl. But I'm talking about guys like Stanley John Baptiste of Nebraska, Keith McGill of Utah, Dante Johnson of North Carolina State, tell me, Paul, which of these guys are really cornerbacks and which are really, you know, even though they're playing cornerback in the Senior Bowl, are going to end up being safeties in the NFL?
Yeah. That's a well-founded question. The most impressive of that genre to me this week was Stanley Jean. Jean, I got to get it right now. I'm a Frenchman. I got to pronounce it correctly. Stanley Jean-Baptiste from Nebraska. He didn't come in quite as big as I had seen him listed on many of the draft lists, mm-hmm. weight-wise. Height, he was right on. He's 6'2 and a quarter, or 3/8. He came in at 215, which is still quite impressive, but what impressed me the most, looking at him on the field, if you watch his feet, if you watch his press cover, if you watch him running with the wide receivers on the deeper routes, you would not guess that he was a 215-pound cornerback, because he's smooth. He can keep up with these guys, no problem. And the fact that adds to the cream here, you know, the cream on top of the milk, if it's unpasteurized, is the fact that his arms are 32 3/8 inches long, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful, wonderful cornerback size. I personally think if he goes to the combine and puts up numbers that I think he might, and I think he'll put up numbers that will put him, even with the smaller guys in there, the sprinters mixed in with him, I still think this guy's going to put up 40 numbers and short shuttle and a few other of the agility drills that will put him in the top quarter of the cornerback group. Then when the NFL scouts and personnel people look at that size, the Seahawks aren't going to be the only people that are interested in him. It's early. I haven't watched a whole lot of Jean-Baptiste, but I will say this. The first thing that pops into my mind in watching him this week in some detail is the name Nnamdi Asamoah.
That's another impressive comparison. I mean, certainly that is some high standard there, a former NFL MVP or defensive MVP, was it?
Yes.
Anyway, Paul, Keith McGill and Dante Johnson, are these guys cornerbacks or safeties then?
I think McGill has a chance at cornerback. He did not do anything that really stood out to me this week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always say, Brian, there's 110 players here approximately. Yeah. And the concept, now I'm going to be prejudiced here, the concept that anybody can come down and watch 3 days of slightly less than 2-hour practices and tell you that they've got an opinion and an educated one on every guy here is insane. Mm-hmm. You know, the only chance of doing that would be if you got every minute of practice tape that the NFL Network ran and you went home and you watched that for the next month.
Yeah.
Then maybe you would be in a position going into the combine to have an opinion. McGill did not do anything to stand out in the 3 days that I actually saw him in action. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying he can't. I'm saying that I'm not sure on that. Dante Johnson, cornerback safety combo might be drafted by round 5 or 6. I don't see a great prospect there. I would say to you, the guy that's more interesting, I'm going to segue slightly here on you. The guy that was interesting to me in the secondary coming in here, and he's interesting to me going out of here because of 5 minutes I spent talking with him and watching him during the week, and was mentioned briefly by one of the coaches in a conversation. I think that fascinating watch is Dez Southward, the safety from Wisconsin. Just like the Badgers did during the regular season, down here, at least in practices, and I'll be curious to see if they do it in the game tomorrow, Southward was one of the few guys that the coaching staff played at cornerback and safety. because they felt he had enough athleticism to be over at the corner, at least for a look-see.
Yeah, as a Wisconsin season ticket holder and watched a lot of Des Southward this year, I think it's good that he has the versatility to play cornerback in a pinch. The guy has all the measurables in the world, but just never in 4 years was much of a big play guy. He could come up and hit a little bit, but man, he's an undrafted guy to me. But anyway.
Oh, no, I think you're wrong there, Brian. I think they're going to, I think he's going to put up some good numbers. I think they're going to take a look at film and say, geez, Wisconsin put him on Cody Hoffman in the BYU game because they knew their corners were too small and couldn't handle him.
Yeah.
And he at least kept the guy under control when he needed to. And don't forget, Southward may be a guy, Brian, that has, and remember he also played for the Bielema coaching staff for 3 of those years. Southward is a guy whose primary sport in high school was basketball.
Okay.
And I believe he only played high school football as a senior.
All right. Fair enough. That's a good point, and one I didn't really know about his high school background too much. Well, I'll definitely keep an eye on him, that's for sure. Speaking of safeties, one guy I really like and who seems to be generating a buzz this week is Jimmy Ward of Northern Illinois. For my money, he might be the best cover cornerback, cover safety in this entire draft class. But of course, the whole thing with him is I wish he was bigger because I would like to like him even more. But, he's kind of that size where he's kind of slight for the NFL.
Yeah, he is. And it shows up out on the field. If he's going to try to come up and rock people and run support like he did at NIU, obviously that's going to be an issue in the NFL because the guys that he's going to be trying to do that to are so much bigger and stronger that he's going to get hurt. I think, to be honest with you, And I must defer here, all you listeners, I must defer a bit to Brian, because watching DBs and writing about DBs and analyzing them is what Brian does. And yours truly isn't exactly, I don't even consider myself my strongest suit to be watching the DBs and analyzing them. But again, Turner has kind of gotten lost in the shuffle down here. I think if he's going to make an NFL team, initially it's absolutely going to have to be as a special team player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to work very hard to get his fanny out onto the field on scrimmage plays. I think what's going to really hurt him, Brian, is he's going to be a disappointment at the combine. His numbers are going to be mediocre to poor in most of what he does.
That's interesting. We'll keep tabs on that for when the combine comes around about a month from now. We'll kind of go through some prospects here. I got a bunch of guys I just want to ask you about. Maybe we'll go a minute or less on each of these guys so we can kind of get through a few names here. Rashid Hageman, defensive lineman from Minnesota. If he's on the board, is he a talent? And B.J. Raji leaves at free agency for the Packers, and Ryan Pickett's a free agent. Is this a guy who they couldn't pass up as a D lineman?
I'm not sure. Talent is not the issue with Rashid. The issue is dedication, hustle, consistency. Not the kind of guy that I normally expect Ted Thompson to be in love with.
Hello, Paul, are you there?
I'm still here.
Oh.
I'm trying to be careful with my words so that we can get to more of your players, Brian.
I got you. I thought you were just going
to
say
waiting for me to babble on about it.
I was expecting a little.
And by the way, he did not answer any of those questions. He absolutely dominated at times, and he disappeared at times down here this week.
Yeah. Jack Muhort, the offensive tackle from Ohio State, I thought he had a huge senior season. And I think he's going to make a terrific pro. It might be at right tackle, but your thoughts?
I think he is a very sound player. He did, you know, he doesn't draw attention with the way he plays, but on the times that I watched him for a couple of snaps during a drill and on 11-on-11 semi-scrimmaging, he doesn't make many mistakes, and he's big enough and strong enough to hold his own. I think third, more likely fourth round, I think he could have a future in the NFL.
Very good. The quarterback class, certainly not the greatest at the Senior Bowl, the group at the Senior Bowl. But my question is the Miami quarterback, Stephen Morris. I heard so much about him in the offseason. He went to that Manning Passing Academy and was like the talk of the camp and in the media afterwards. He won some award there. You know, why that and why is so many people down on him now?
Well, I think the catch is that I'm not convinced that Stephen Morris has gotten any better as an overall quarterback since his sophomore year in college.
Mm-hmm.
He still seems to be lost at times in when they break the huddle, and I don't think he reads defenses very well at all. And his throwing accuracy is all over the place. He has not been impressive down here at all. And I'm being kind.
C.J. Fedorowicz, the tight end from Iowa, I heard people, you know, compare him to Rob Gronkowski. That's a little too much. But anyway, I see him, and I see a guy though who's willing to block. And I almost wonder, does he make a better prospect than a guy like Austin Seferian Jenkins, a guy who many say is unwilling to block?
In that comparison, I would say yes. I like Fedorowicz, but obviously it's the old story. What are you looking for? I don't think, and you didn't ask me this, but I don't think he fits the Packer mold.
Okay.
But I think if he went to the right team that uses their tight end to clean out the middle of the field, to block, I think he's got the size. I think he's got the attitude that, given a couple of years, he could become a nice, steady tight end that you don't have to replace in the red zone, and he'll catch you 50 balls a year.
I certainly wouldn't mind if the Packers had that tight end. I think that, you know, obviously they've got Finley, and he's not that type of guy who's going to line up in line and take out the middle of the field. But, man, if they had that kind of guy, I wouldn't mind seeing that, and they made that transition.
If he lasted long enough, by the fourth round, if he's still sitting on the board, and the Packers have, in my opinion, you know, met some of their real need areas mm-hmm. in the first three rounds, or gotten an incredible athlete in those first three rounds, I could find myself saying, fourth round, go for him, Ted. Get CJ, get the kid from Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure he'd last that long, but anyway. Gabe Jackson, the big guard from Mississippi State, he said in an interview this week, he interviewed with the Packers, and you know, kind of interesting to me that the Packers this year really did start to show the signs of wanting to be more of a power team. I think having Eddie Lacy certainly helps that. But I mean, is a guy like Gabe Jackson actually Green Bay material? Could they kind of like bring a guy like that in and then take the next step, becoming even more of a power running team?
Well, if they do, it'll be the signal that they've really gone hog wild in that direction.
Yeah,
because Gabe Jackson. Okay, I like Gabe Jackson. I personally think that, and he didn't show me anything that I didn't expect this week. He's still going to be somewhat of a liability in pass pro unless you've got a strong center behind him who can help him. But he is absolutely a road grader. I am dead serious on this, and some people look at me like Pigskin Paul's gone senile. But I don't see a whole lot of difference between Gabe Jackson this year and Chance Warmack last year. My contention is if Gabe Jackson any time in his Mississippi State career had played in an offensive line with T.J. Fluker and the Quanjo brothers, he would have looked a lot better. I think Chance Warmack benefited from the guys around him. And I think Gabe Jackson can make it. But, yeah, I don't see him in Green Bay. And I don't think they're going to go quite that far with upgrading the size quotient along the Packer offensive line. I think he's going to have a limited appeal to, you know, maybe a half dozen teams in the NFL that still have strong running orientation.
Yeah. These two teams kind of stick out in my mind here. They've got a couple representatives at the Senior Bowl. I'm talking about Virginia, who's got a defensive end, Brent Urban, and a tackle, Morgan Moses. And the University of Wyoming has a cornerback, Markiston Huff, and a wide receiver, Robert Heron. If these guys are so good, why weren't these teams, these football teams, better, Paul?
Well, among other things, Brian, the quick answer for me is, of all the sports, football's a team sport. There's 22 guys out there that have to get the job done, not five, like basketball. And I think, none of those guys you mentioned, other than maybe Moses, none of them is an elite talent, but they are solid football players. And it's a combination, I think. Sometimes you just get poor coaches at the smaller Division I schools. And Wyoming's going through some coaching changes. Virginia has had multiple coaches since George Welch retired way back when.
Mm-hmm.
They just become a product of the system they're in, and they can only do so much to overcome that. But all those guys that you mentioned have come down here, and they have competed, and I see some pros and cons on every one of them.
Yeah. Before we let you go here, Paul, we got a question I saw earlier on our live blog from a reader, John, and he brings up a very good question, and it doesn't have to do with any players in particular, but I think this is interesting. He asks, why is there no all-star game for juniors? Now, we saw a record, I think it's 98 juniors declare or underclassmen declare for the NFL draft. Why is there, no place for them to go for an all-star game? Why is that strictly prohibited?
That's a great question, and it is a topic that I have vented on multiple times. The guys that I'm hanging with down here in the media are getting sick of me pontificating on that subject. I will tell you that, in my opinion, and I think it's wrong, I think it will change in some way, shape, or form in the near future. But reading the tea leaves, Brian, at this stage of the game, I would say to you that the NFL's attitude and stated philosophy on this is that they don't want to, in any way, shape, or form, encourage student athletes to leave college early.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That is their mantra. That is their suck up to try to keep college athletic directors and university presidents on their good side, because obviously they count on going to those campuses, talking with coaches, getting to look at coaches' film, to scout the seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Roger Goodell has come out and said it. Now, I think that's insane. The NFL has to allow some kind of early entry, or their butts are going to be in court for unfair labor practices in a heartbeat. And sooner or later, a smart enough lawyer is going to win that battle in the courtroom for the players. You can't deny these people the chance to earn a living and have a career. At some point, I think we will start to see some kind of softening by the NFL on that. But it, I think at this point, it sure, trust me, NFL teams would love to see the system, the scouting people would love to see the system changed so that they could see some of these underclassmen at these kind of venues. And they, it would probably lead to the expansion of all-star games. By the same token, Brian, and I'll shut up on this, this is a good but very average group of players at the Senior Bowl this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, it isn't going to get better next year because 98 kids declared for the draft this year.
Yeah.
And 50 of them could have possibly been in this game next year as seniors, and they're not going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, not that the, and again, what is the significance of the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game in the big picture of college football and pro football? Hey, it's small. You know, Phil Savage fights for their life every year mm-hmm. to keep this game relevant and on the good side of the NFL and the colleges. But at some point, this would be a huge help if instead of a guy like Marquestin Huff from Wyoming, who has shown me nothing this week, that's just me, instead of him being here, they could have had a guy that came out early. Premier guys aren't coming, okay? But second round, third round guys could be here.
Yeah, and not that there's not a spot for Marquestin Huff in one of these lower tier bowl games too.
Correct.
You know, I mean, we could spend an hour just talking about this topic. I think at some point you're going to see these in the not too far future, colleges are going to start paying these guys. They're going to have to. And maybe once they do start paying them, and it's not going to be millions in college, but,
right.
you know, they're going to be more inclined to stay in school where they are making some money, perhaps. Because I also think, like, if the NFL really wanted to, and I don't think they want to, but if they wanted, they could have their own minor league like football does, like hockey does, where they you know, that the Packers have their own farm team.
Yeah, they don't want to go there.
I know they don't.
The expense is just too huge because you already have 60. Let's just pick a number. Every NFL team has at least 60 guys
mm-hmm.
that are already paying, and the NFL minimum wage is about $400,000 right now.
Well, you don't have to pay the farmhands that kind of money as they don't in baseball, you know.
Right, but then you get into insurance and liability. Yeah, you know, your first statement is absolutely correct. The NFL has no desire to get involved in minor league. I think the closest they came was when they had the European football for a few seasons.
Yeah, I know they like colleges to be their minor league, so they
exactly.
don't, you know, it's out of their hands and they don't have to run it. But
exactly.
But yeah, I mean, there is going to have to be some sort of change made in terms of paying
oh, yes.
these guys and things like that. But
yes.
anyway, Paul, we've talked for a half hour here. Thank you so much for joining us here this morning to talk about these Senior Bowl prospects. It's great as always. And for the fans wanting more from you, they'll get more from you as part of our Pro Football Preview Draft Guide coming up in the next few weeks. But I assume you're going to have thoughts at pigskinpaul.com for here and the combine and things like that.
Oh yes, I think you can count on that.
All right. Well, Paul, have fun. Are you staying for the game in Mobile?
Oh yes. Oh yes, I'm a grinder in my own way, just like Ted Thompson.
All right. Well, have fun of the game on Saturday afternoon, and we'll touch base with you again. Maybe we always have you on the show during the draft itself, so we'll talk to you then for sure.
All right, Brian. Thanks for having me, and stay warm up there, folks.
All right. Take care. Pigskin Paul Guillemette joining us as he does every year from the site of the All-Star Games, talking NFL draft prospects here. and all sorts of issues as we got into amateurism and in the NFL and developmental leagues and college football and all that kind of stuff. That's fun. Like I said, I could talk about that for an hour, and it's an in-depth topic that, you know, if you want to get down to it, could really have some lawyers involved at some point. But anyway, the big thing is talking about these prospects here. Who might the Packers be looking at? I mean, as Paul said, there's over 100 guys there this week. It's hard to get a read on everyone. But, yeah, lots of good guys, and we're seeing who the Packers might take here and fits possibly for this team, things like that. So a lot of good talk here on a Friday. Hey, folks, this is going to be the last episode of Railbird Central for a week. I'm going to be at the site of the Super Bowl next week in New York City. I'm going to be too busy to be doing any morning television shows. I tell you, the media availability. I was just taking a look at our schedule. The freaking bus departs at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time to go to media day, I believe, next week. Some of these days are so unbelievably early for me, but my promise to you, I'm going to try to provide as good a coverage as I can possible for articles for you to read all next week from the site of the Super Bowl, things like that. I hope to have some good stuff, maybe on, like, you know, Seahawks general manager John Schneider, former Packers guy. I'd like to be able to write something on him to kind of give you that little Packers angle here, kind of being our forte at CheeseheadTV.com. But I think there will be some good stories coming out of the Super Bowl. So I apologize, no Railbird Central for a week, but make sure to look for our coverage of the Super Bowl at CheeseheadTV.com. So I appreciate it, all of you tuning in today and listening. So for a week, that'll do it. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Caribou. We'll see you later, everyone. Stay tuned to Cheesehead TV for all your news needs all week long, all weekend long. Whenever news breaks, we'll touch on it. But I leave you today with a song called Bellwether by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.